Good morning. Karen is reminding me, if you're a visitor, we'd love to have a record of your attendance. And so you fill out that little white card. There's a drawing for a brand new pickup truck at the end of the service. So put that in there for that. So good to see you. If you want to turn to Luke chapter 18, our text is really all over the place. This is one of the places that we'll look this morning. But Luke 18, there's a story there I would want to mention this morning. So it is good to see everyone. Zig Ziglar is one of my heroes. I know Kelly and I were just talking about him the other day. And Ziglar, in his book, See You at the Top, opens the very first chapter with a story about a guy by the name of John Jones. John Jones is traveling. It's an old book. He's an old author, and it's an old story. He's traveling by train from New York City to Boston. And so he is in the train depot. He has about 10, 15 minutes to spare. And he goes over and he sees one of the machines. Now, years ago, they'd have a weight machine. You'd put a nickel in it. It would not only tell you your weight, but it would give you kind of like almost like a fortune cookie, something good, you know. And so this guy, John Jones, he sees it and he puts his nickel in and he stands on the scale. And, you know, the little machine gives this thing and it says, your name is John Jones. You weigh 188 pounds. And you're catching the 220 to Boston. He's like, looks around like, what? How did it know my name? You know, how does it know where I'm going? What in the world? And so he kind of stands around and he's intrigued and he watches when a lady gets up and she, which was impressive enough for a lady to want to know her weight, right? You don't want to know that. And she puts her nickel in and he watches and she reads it and smiles and walks off. And he's like, what? So he goes back. And he puts a nickel in and he stands there again and it says, your name is still John Jones. You still weigh 188 pounds and you're still catching the 220 to Boston. Something's weird. Grabs a suitcase, goes into the bathroom, changes clothes, changes shoes, puts his sunglasses on, slicks his hair back, puts a hat on, kind of disguises himself, comes back over, you know, and stands, puts his nickel in and it says, your name is still John Jones. You still weigh 188 pounds, and you just missed the 220 to Boston. And that's Ziglar's way of saying, we get sidetracked, don't we? We get sidetracked. Other things kind of get in our way. We've got things that are important, things that we've got to do, and all of a sudden, we miss our train. We miss the things that are important because of our time. And I think that never before in human history do we get so sidetracked. Donita and I were just talking last week about, you know, we got lots of stuff going on. And I know with what she does for a living, that sometimes she's like, there's not 24, I need more than 24 hours in a day to get it all done. She manages a bowling alley of a bunch of whiny bowlers is what she does. Robert Hastings wrote, the great dividing line between success and failure can be expressed in five words. I don't have the time. That's the dividing line between success and failure. There are fathers who plan to or want to get better acquainted with their sons or their daughters. Found myself there many times. When I have time, I'll do that. When I get a little bit more time in the day, I'll take care of that. There's moms who intend to be attentive to their daughters or their sons, and life just goes. And we get that there are husbands and wives who are about to work on their relationship, right? We're about to do a little bit more. We'll go ahead and take that class. We'll go ahead and read that book, or we'll spend that time. We'll get to it. We're going to do that. And there are countless Christians who definitely read their Bible more, or they'll pray more, or they'll dedicate their life more when, you know, dot, dot, dot. You know, we have those moments, and we have those moments. So when in the world are we going to live as if we understood this is our time? We get 1,440 minutes a day. You don't get to save them up. You don't get them, you know, at midnight, you don't save them for the next day. You know, wouldn't that be great? On those days that we have days off, I would love to have 4 or 5 hours from the day before so I get a 28 or 29 hour day off. That would be great, but we don't. At midnight, we lose the minutes we didn't spend the way we wanted to, and we start over and we get 1,440 more. And so how we want to spend those is extremely important. And I know this sounds crazy, but when I want to see an example of someone who seemed to live life as if they always used their time wisely, it's Jesus. And you say, well, of course it's Jesus. You're in church. You're a minister. He did. He did the things he wanted. He accomplished the goals that he set out to do. His mission was always reached. Every word he spoke was monitored by someone. Think about that. Every word he spoke was monitored. Every action was analyzed. Every gesture was commented on. He was pursued constantly. His enemies were pursuing him. His friends were pursuing him. Those who didn't even know him wanted him to heal him or spend time with him. He was just constantly under pressure. And yet he found time to do the things that were important. He really didn't have much private life. And so I was thinking to myself, what if he lived now? Can you imagine if somehow or another we could transport Jesus into this day and time? How would he live? What would he do? Where would he go? Would he answer, would he even have a cell phone, but would he answer unknown phone calls? Because I don't know about you, but I don't. Yeah, you know, it's unknown number, skunk. You know? So if you've ever called me and I don't have your number, that's why I don't answer. Would he fly or would he still walk? Not fly, you know, fly. Right? Would he utilize the things around him? Would he be interested in Facebook and Instagram and Twitter? I mean, how would he manage what modern day technology has given to us? How would he manage that many relationships? Because it's a whole lot easier, is it not, to maintain more and more and more relationships because of technology? I mean, I'm not taking anything away from Jesus' world because he lived very much in a world that demanded his time, and yet he seemed to have always found the time. He wasn't ever hurried. I don't see it in Scripture. I don't feel like he was ever hurried. I don't feel like he was ever playing catch up, that he was ever doing anything where he was running late. And so, think about this. He didn't have a laptop. He didn't have a cell phone. He didn't have a personal secretary. He didn't have a single Apple device. No way. I don't think he carried around an appointment calendar. But he found time to teach and preach the message of Jesus. He always found time for the hurting. When somebody was hurting, when somebody was in pain, when somebody was in need, always had the time. He found the time to be with those few special apostles that he chose. He discipled them. He spent time with them. And here's the kicker. He always found time to be alone with God. He always found time to spend with his Father and to just say, hey, you guys go over there. I'm going to go spend some time with my dad. So here's how we've got to look at this tonight, or this morning, I should say. How did Jesus get so organized? I mean, I like to ask good questions. I sit in my office and I look at my stuff and I'm like, what's a question that I want to ask of this information? And my question is, how did he get organized? How did he do that? So it was a different day and time. Well, I want to make 2 points, all right? Two. That's it, two. Now, last week I made 4. 4 and 2 is 6. So see, that's really 2 3-point lessons. I did good. See, I'm gonna work it in there. So two. Number one, point number one, Jesus clearly understood his mission. Jesus clearly understood his mission. And here's the thing. Jesus found the time. Do we not find time for the people that we love? Do we not find the time for the things that we love? Do we not, and I said this earlier, don't we carve out the time that we want to carve out? I mean, we look at our 1,440-hour day. I remember one of my teachers at ACU used to say, you know, we were busy. I was working full-time and going to school and being a part-time youth minister and working 2 jobs. And I was thinking, I'm thinking, man, I'm sleeping 4 hours a day. And this guy says, oh, I can always find more time in your day. And I said it out loud. I remember, you know, just kind of like Peter, stick your foot in your mouth. And I went, oh, really? I'd love for you to find 30 more minutes in my day. And he goes, what time do you get up? And I said, 2. And he goes, 2? And I said, yeah, 2 in the morning. I go to work at UPS. I'm there at 2:30 in the morning. And he goes, oh, well, okay, we'll get up at 1:30. there's 30 minutes, right? You know, what time do you get up? 6. We'll get up at 5:30. And you're like, oh, well, but the reality is we can find the time. You know, we have, you know, time all over the place. You know, what time do you go to bed? We'll go to bed 30 minutes later, spend that 30 minutes with God. I mean, we can find that time, but it's important for us to see it in that way. Jesus always had time for people. One of his purpose statements was, I came to seek and to save the lost. And in every aspect of Jesus' life, I always see him finding time for people. In a crowd, a woman touches his robe. I mean, they're going through the crowds and people are bumping into him. He's bumping into them. And all of a sudden he feels something leave him, a power that leaves him. And he's like, who touched me? And it feels like a 3-year-old. Who touched me? You touched me. Who touched me? You know, and the disciples are like, Jesus, everybody's bumping. He goes, oh no, this was an intentional touch. And Jesus stops. I mean, if you think about it, he could have just went like, wow, that was cool. She had faith and she's healed. Great. But a woman with an issue of blood for 12 years touches him. And she's like, well, I didn't want to bother you. I just wanted to touch you. I figured if I touched you, I would be fine. And he took the time to say, hey, your faith is what made you well. And right behind that, you have these stories of these little kids who want to come and hang out with Jesus and they want to spend time with him. And the disciples and the apostles are like, no, you know, leave the master alone. He's too busy for that. And he's like, oh, no, let the kids come. They can sit on my lap. They can hang out with me. For such as these belong to the kingdom. I mean, he always took time. And you have to understand, in their culture, women and children were not lifted up. They were down in the social scale. And so Jesus spent time with them. He spent time with the kids. And here's the story. Luke 18, 35 through 43. Jesus' last walk toward Jerusalem. He's got to go through Jericho. He's on the outskirts of Jericho. And Jesus took time for women. He took time for children. And he took time for those who were lepers and blind and not 100% whole. And in that culture, again, not well accepted. Luke 18, 35 through 43. As Jesus approached Jericho, a blind man was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard the crowd going by, he asked what was happening. They told him, Jesus of Nazareth is passing by. He called out, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. Those who led the way rebuked him and told him to be quiet. Shh, be quiet. Master's busy. We got important things to do. I threw that in there. But he shouted all the more, son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus stopped, ordered the man to be brought to him. When he came near, Jesus asked him, what do you want me to do for you? Lord, I want to see, he replied. Jesus said, receive your sight. Your faith has healed you. Immediately he received his sight. He followed Jesus, praising God. When all the people saw it, they also praised God. Jesus stops because it was important to his mission. His mission was to seek and to save the lost. When he saw those who were lost, he stopped. He's going to take the time because it's part of his mission. So Jesus understood his mission, and we need to do the same. Now, here's the thing. You can see the apostles maybe looking at their watch, which they didn't have, but they did in this illustration because I'm doing it. They look at their watch and they're like, Jesus, we got to go. We're on our way to the Passover. Like Kelly was just talking about, we're on our way to the Passover. That's a big deal for the Jews. I mean, a huge deal for the Jews. And we need to get there. And we've got all stuff, kinds of stuff going on when we get there. And Jesus stops. It reminds me of my kids and my wife. Because we'll be on our way to go eat or something, and I'll be like, and I'm not trying to say I'm equal to Jesus by any means, but I like to visit with people. Right, Jim? Yeah. I mean, I get to the back this morning, you know, I get to the back this morning, and they're like, say the prayer, we're done, you know, because I'm supposed to meet and talk about. But it's like, hey, I want to spend time with people. So my kids would be like, Dad, don't stop. Please, we're starving, you know, and I'll be like, hey, Joe, I wanted to mention, and they're like, no, you know, and it's not like you don't love Joe. It's like, just let us go. Can we please just go? And they know, but I don't equate that, but people are important to me. They are. People are important to me, and I'm going to take the time for people. Jesus took time out of his schedule every single day to look for the hurt, for the fallen, for the needful, for those who are social outcasts, for those who weren't considered worthy, for children, for women, for those who are sick, for anyone in his world, right? He always took the time, always took the time. And so that's really important for us to pay attention to. Now, if the apostles would understand. Of course, it was their mission. And going to the Passover feast was their focus and their goal, and they were excited about. Then they had every right to say, "Jesus, let's go." But that wasn't Jesus, because Jesus was touching broken lives and fixing hurting hearts and repairing torn relationships. You know, in the very next chapter in Luke 18, or from this chapter where we just read 35 through 43, in Luke 19, he gets to Jericho. And he looks up and he sees a guy in a tree, wee little Zacchaeus, right, in the sycamore tree. And there's Zacchaeus, and he stops. And you can almost see the apostles go, "No, we're trying to get to Jerusalem. We're trying to get to the Passover." And he stops and he's like, "You know what, Zacchaeus, I'd like to eat at your house tonight." "Really?" He's a tax collector. That's the worst of the worst. But he took time. And if you remember the conclusion of all of that, that's where we get Jesus came to seek and to save the lost. That's where that verse comes from, Luke 19:10. But what I love about it, too, is that salvation has come to this house, is what Jesus says. He took the time because it was important, right? So where they're standing, Jesus was misusing his time. But from where Jesus is standing, his time is well spent because it's about his mission. So, what's your mission? That's a good question. I think that's a great question as well. What's your mission? And you say, "Well, I don't have a mission." Well, you should have a mission. We all should have missions. That's, you know, we should all have goals and priorities. We should have a mission. I think it's important that we have a mission. And here's the kicker. If you don't understand or define your mission, then you'll never give the time and energy to that mission. I mean, Jesus knew what his mission was, and he took the time and the energy, his focus, everything was in regards to that mission. What's yours? "Well, I want a better job, or I want, you know, to retire in Mexico. I don't know what your goals or your priorities or your mission is, but we've been given more than that as a spiritual world, as a spiritual people. You know, it's where we do life together. What is that life? What does that represent? I mean, what is that mission? What is my life? What am I here for? You know, is my mission just to preach? Is my mission to reach out to people? Is my mission to tell others about the love of Christ? I mean, what is my mission? I have mine. What's yours? You got to have one. It's important. We need to take a close look at that. So, point number one, Jesus clearly understood his mission. Point number two, he understood his own limits. Remember, he was God, but he became man. And he had to understand his limitations. And so, he sought solitude and time with God before every important decision. Go through your Bible and read all the important things that took place. Jesus sought solitude with God. There's not much to read about in the 30 years prior to his mission, right? He's 30 years old when he begins his adult ministry. We read about his birth, and we read about them taking off to Egypt, and then he's 12 in the temple, and then nothing. Took him 30 years. What did he do for 30 years to prepare for 3 years? I mean, what do we need to do to prepare for what takes place? I mean, I think it's a fun question. I mean, I'm often thinking about heaven and what we do in heaven, and I've got these Friday night videos things in my head that, you know, Friday night videos, we get to see all the cool stuff that happened. You know, tonight in the main theater, Moses parts the Red Sea. Yes! Popcorn, Coke, you know. Well, I want to see that. You know, maybe we can be transported back. I mean, that's just one of my favorite things. What about reality TV series? Jesus, age 4 and 5. You know, Jesus, adolescence. Jesus, puberty. Jesus, the teenager. You know, I mean, do we get to see all that? I mean, wouldn't it be cool to hang out with Jesus and spend... Would Jesus play softball? He'd probably be the pitcher, you know? Would he play poker? Some of you guys were like, "Oh, he wouldn't play." You're going to get mad at me because I'm going to say, I think he'd play poker. I think he'd hang out with everyone that he wanted to hang out with. He'd spend time to do those things in this life that were important to everyone else. He'd spend time with us. That's what he did. That's what he did with them. All right. 30 years of preparation, 3 years of ministry. Think about it. Moses spent 40 years in the desert before talking to Pharaoh. Right? Before communicating to Pharaoh. 40 years. Israelites spent 40 years wandering the desert before they were allowed to enter the promised land. Jesus spent 40 days in the wilderness right after his baptism, right before the official kind of start of his ministry, 40 days fasting and praying, being tempted by Satan, 40 days to prepare. Lots of preparation time going on here. The night spent in prayer, Luke chapter 6, before choosing the 12 apostles. The Mount of Transfiguration before that last little venture as they go in toward Jerusalem. This time spent in the Garden of Gethsemane right before he's got to face the cross. He always spent time in preparation because he understood his mission, but he also understood his own limitations. And so he relied on God to give him the strength to make sure he could accomplish his mission. And we need to do the same. We need to, out of those 1,440 minutes, we need to spend time with God, preparing for the things that are most important. I love what Martin Luther said. He said, "I have so much to do today that I shall spend the first 3 hours in prayer." I think Martin Luther learned that from Jesus. That he knew the importance of what he was trying to do as a minister and as a writer and as a... I don't know what other words to use about Martin Luther. He's a pretty interesting guy if you've ever never read the story of Martin Luther. It's kind of like a lumberjack who says, "I don't have time to sharpen my axe. I got so much work to do." Now, I don't relate to that very much because I'm not a lumberjack. But I know what it means to chop down some trees, and I've got a chainsaw. And I know you got to put some oil in there because otherwise that blade gets real hot real fast and it burns that blade up really, really fast. I also know what it feels like to try and chop a tree down or start chopping branches when your blade's really, really dull. You're really just wasting your time. And so like a lumberjack who knows that he needs to sharpen his blade, like the person who's working in the backyard that needs a brand new blade on their chainsaw or oil it to maximize the amount of time spent. That's what we need to do through prayer, and that's what we need to do in asking God. We need to sharpen our axe. I think Jesus was a master of time, a lord of time, because he always took time to prepare, always took time to be ready for the events that were coming his way. He knew his limits, and he needed God's help. So Jesus clearly understood his mission. Jesus clearly understood his own limits. And the question I have for you now is, when are you going to get started? Because everybody says, "Well, I want to do that. You kind of sparked a little nerve there. I'm going to do something." When are you going to get started? I love Walt Disney. He said, "The way to get started is to quit talking and begin doing." That's a pretty good little quote from Walt Disney. Maybe you need some help establishing a personal mission. I think Jesus gives us all a personal mission. I think he states it in the Sermon on the Mount. I think it was mentioned a little bit there in Kelly's thoughts, but it's seeking. He says in Matthew 6:33, "Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all this other stuff," okay, that's Mike's version, "will come to you." All these other things will fall right into place. If you want the things in this life, the relationships and the importance of those relationships and to have a mission, then Jesus said, "Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and everything else will fall into place." And so I hope this morning I've encouraged you to look at your time. And as we continue this series over the next 3 weeks, next week we're going to talk about the importance of family. And that's not just physical family, that's spiritual family, relationships that we have. And then we'll talk about the importance of thanksgiving and the recognition of the thanks that we need to be giving to God daily. And then I titled this lesson based on playing hide and go seek. Ready or not, here I come. And we're going to talk about Jesus' second coming. Ready or not, he's coming. And how we need to spend our time being ready for that. So this morning we're going to sing a song. If there's anything this congregation can do for you, please let it be known. And Jim's got us a closing song. Let's